on to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He is...
Dr. Van Beek.
Don't you forget it, everyone.
And don't you forget it. It's an earned degree.
That's right. There's a quiz at the end. We're asking every one of you. My friend, we are picking up right where we left off in Esther. But why don't you give us a preview of what we're going to see tonight?
Well, I could, but I was going to mention that Lynn...
Oh, yes.
...said to me the other day, I did not know that your doctorate was controversial. I said...
Hang on a second. Your wife
yeah.
did not know.
Yeah. And I said, well, it would only have been controversial if I was applying for a doctorate, for a job in a conservative Christian school.
Good point.
Yeah. Being the registrar, nobody ever cared. And since nobody reads those things, it didn't matter at all.
Yeah. Can you stand? And can you, can you tell faculty, yes, I'll do whatever you want? Yeah.
So now we are getting introduced to the, what do you call that? You call that the antagonist, right? There's the protagonist and the antagonist. Oh,
thank you. Yes.
So Esther's the protagonist.
Yes.
Maybe even Mordecai. And Haman, our friend Haman.
Yes.
Is the antagonist.
Okay.
And so we can just start reading and then we can explain stuff as we go.
You stop me whenever you want. I am your servant, sir.
Well, maybe read read down to 5 and then we can talk about the first 5 verses.
Okay. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Mordecai, seriously? Come on.
Yeah. You miserable man.
You're asking for it. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated. For he told them he was a Jew.
Oh. Yes, never let on that you're a Jew.
Right.
Or
right.
a Christian.
Right. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes.
There you are. So first of all, Haman was obviously good at his job.
Right.
And you know, the great lush of a king that Xerxes was, he decided to promote him. So he promoted Haman, you know, above everybody else in the kingdom. And Haman was an Agagite. Now, being an Agagite, so that would have been his lineage. Ah, okay, I'm gonna do this for you, Stevie.
No, you take your time.
So being an Agagite would be a descendant of Agag, the king of the Amalekites. Oh. Amalek was a grandson or an offspring of Esau. So Esau's offsprings go a couple ways, right? The Ammonites? No, the Ammonites are Lot. The Edomians, the Edomites are descendants of Esau. And the Amalekites are descendants of Esau. And there's Kizzites as well that are descendants of Esau. So these are groups of people that are descendants of Esau. Mm. Esau was Jacob's brother, right. As you recall.
Right. So they have a common forefather.
Yes. And the Edomites were generally enemies of the Jews. Sometimes they were friends. Sometimes they were enemies. The Amalekites tended to be enemies all the time. Now, was it not the Amalekites that Balaam that brought Balaam to curse the Israelites, and then he couldn't? Was that the Amalekites or was that the Moabites? I think it was the Amalekites.
I think it's the Amalekites.
We're going to say Amalekites at this point.
Yeah, Lynn will tell us if we're wrong. That's okay.
Lynn will straighten us out for sure.
Yeah, and we appreciate that, so it's all good.
Yeah, and we could take the time and find out, but I'm pretty sure it was the Amalekites. So these guys are all semi-related, sort of related to the Jewish people, mm-hmm. but very much hated them. Mm-hmm. They attacked the Jews when they were coming through, when they were coming back into the land. It was the Amalekites that caused them so much grief.
Right.
So there would have been a deep-seated, like, hatred that Haman would have had. Like, it would have gone beyond the person right away, because when he found out he was Jewish, it was like, oh man, I hate all of those people.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. And so then he was looking for a way to make everybody pay. He didn't want to, you know, it was the old mafia thing. Like,
yeah.
We don't just kill you. We first kill your family.
Yeah.
You know, we let you watch and then we kill you. That whole, yeah, that whole movie, the movie mafia people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is that kind of a thing. And that's what he wants to do. And he's buddies with all these guys, right?
Okay.
But the guys at the gate, it looks like they kind of like Mordecai.
Hmm. Like they plead with him, right? They plead with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why aren't you bowing down before him?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why don't you just like do a little thing here?
Yeah.
Sort of like the book of Revelation when you don't bow down and you know, and you bow down to the king and say, oh, Domitian, Domitian, we love you. And John said to the Christians, you can't do it. They go, well, we all know he's not a god. Yeah, most of us know, but you can't do it.
Yeah.
And Mordecai would not bow down to this guy. He told his buddies that he was a Jew. They probably unknowingly let Haman know that. You know, like, kind of, it's sort of like they went to him and said, hey, what do we do about this? He's Jewish and they have these other rules, so maybe it's okay that he does this. Are you okay with this? Because it doesn't look like they were totally squealing on him.
Yeah.
But he flips out.
Yeah.
Oh, a Jew won't bow down to me. Does he not? Do you not know who I am? Does that kind of, okay.
Do you know who I am? Actually, yeah. I do, and still... No.
Still means nothing to me.
Verse 7 then. In the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, in the month of Nisan, which make a lovely car, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yes, they do. And Nisan, by the way. Nisan is also the month of, which is Nisan. Nisan is also Abib. Which in our calendar.
Thank you, because I gave you a blank look.
I know, and saying it again didn't seem to make any difference.
Nope.
Which is March, April in our calendar.
Okay.
So you'll notice that the Jewish holidays jump around in our calendar a lot.
Right.
And that's because their calendar doesn't coincide with ours.
Hmm.
And that's why, like Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Hanukkah can be anywhere like December 30. 3 to 30, anywhere between 3 and 30. Mm-hmm. Usually falls somewhere around Christmas. Okay. It doesn't have to be right in that same week.
Right.
You know? And Yom Kippur, they don't care about Yom Kippur, but maybe they do. Oh, Passover is March 31st, April 27th. So remember how our Easter falls all over the place?
Yeah,
same. Well, that's because it's always the same date in their calendar. But it flips around in ours because they don't line up.
Okay.
And the Jewish people in the book of Enoch, that book that I studied, it had a book called the Astronomical Book. Great big long book discussing how long a year should be. Should you go a lunar calendar or a solar calendar? Should it be 360 days or 364 days? These were the arguments that they were having.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So in the month of Nisan, like Larry said, March, April, the Pur, that is the lot, was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar.
Okay. So they decided that in Adar, on the 12th of Adar, which is February, March.
Okay.
Okay. So there's Adar, February, March. Adar 1 is not leap year, by the way. Well, it's leap year. But somewhere between February and March again. So remember, it was March, April that they made this choice, and it was just about a year later they were going to wipe out the Jews.
Okay.
So he had this fairly long plan, and Pur was the lot. And remember, the holiday that we're going to talk about later is Purim.
Ah, look at you go pulling that in. Okay, then Haman said to King Xerxes, there's a certain people dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom who keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all other people, and they do not obey the king's laws, which is not true, but it is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will give 10,000 talents of silver to the king's administrators for the royal treasury.
Yeah, so you can see Haman was a wealthy, wealthy man.
Ooh, I didn't know this part of the story, actually, in my memories.
Yeah, well, because he doesn't take it. So if you read the next verse.
So the king took his signet ring from his finger, gave it to Haman, son of the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Keep the money, the king said to Haman, and do with the people as you please.
Yeah. Ah, do what you want, man. Yeah. Like, you're my second in command. You want to kill them all? Kill them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And bring me that wine over there while you're there.
Yes. Yes. That's the, yes. Where's my cupbearer?
Yeah.
That's oh, right. I sent him back. No, that's the next guy sends him away.
All right. Verse 12. Then on the 13th day of the first month, the royal secretaries were summoned. They wrote out in the script of each province in the language of each of the people all Haman's orders to the king's satraps, governors of the various provinces, and nobles of the various peoples. They were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring. Dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces in order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children, on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, to plunder their goods. A copy of the text of the edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to people of every nationality so they would be ready for that day. The king's couriers went out, spurred on by the king's command, and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered.
So that's interesting, isn't it? So the king says, yeah, go ahead. And he sends out this edict. So this edict goes to all the provinces. And we're going to read right away that the Jews read this and they were terrified. Rightfully so. Mm-hmm. Very much like the Jews in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very similar, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you got some time, but we're building towards this time when we're going to kill you. The only difference is this edict was very plain.
Right.
Where in Germany they kind of eased it in, but here it was, you know, in a year from now we're going to just kill you all.
Yeah.
And we have the king. But notice that the people in Susa were bewildered.
Yeah.
Because they're living like the Jewish people are living amongst all these people, you know, and they're their neighbors and their friends.
Right.
And they're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
You know, and forgetting, you know, we got a great lush of a king and
yeah,
and an idiot as his right hand man.
And Mordecai provokes him.
And Mordecai, yeah, Mordecai is a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is. But he's a jerk standing up for what is right.
Yeah.
Because really, you need the jerks of this world to stand up for what's right.
Yeah.
You know, us nice guys, we bow down fairly quickly. And let things go by without saying anything. But I like that the people were bewildered. And it makes me think again of the movies that you see about Germany and in the ghettos, mm-hmm, and stuff,
mm-hmm,
where people were friends and then all of a sudden over time it changes and they turn their back on their friends.
Right.
Not everybody.
No, but a great many did because they were scared too, right?
They were scared. Yeah, they were scared. Yeah. Like people said, if we lived back then, we wouldn't do that, but we didn't live back then.
Yeah.
We don't know what we would
do. Yeah, yeah. That's present to... What do they call it?
Presentism.
Presentism at its best, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, now we turn to chapter 4, and this is now we see where this works in Esther into the story, right?
Yes, Esther comes back in.
Chapter 4, verse 1. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he only went as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes.
Now remember, you got a whole year for this to play out.
Right.
Like, this doesn't play out in a week. It's a year.
Yeah. Which is funny, right? Because when we tell the story, usually in a sermon, we kind of gloss over that. Again, like you've said many times, we compress the time of the Bible so often.
Like in Lord of the Rings, in the movie, it looks like Gandalf just goes away and then he comes right back and they're dealing with the ring. But in the book, it's 14 years
mm-hmm.
that Gandalf is searching the libraries to find out what's going on with this ring.
Mm-hmm.
So but in the movie, it's very short. So in a sermon, it's short, but in actuality, it was a whole year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Verse 4 now, folks. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathalak, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathalak went out to Mordecai in the open square.
Sounds like the commercial with the goose. Hathalak.
Yeah, he's Hathalak. <That's right. laughs> He went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city, in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. Ooh, interesting that Mordecai knows that, too.
It is intriguing, isn't it?
Yeah. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show Esther and explain it to her, and she told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people.
Okay, so that's the beginning of it, right?
Yeah.
Mordecai says to his cousin, his young cousin, go to the king and see if you can't beg for us.
Right. Okay. Verse 9 now. Hathalak went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your family and your father's family will perish. Who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this.
And that's the thing that everybody preaches on.
Yeah, exactly.
For such a time as this.
Yeah, we all love that.
Yes.
You're here for such a time as this.
Yeah.
Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go and gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night and day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.
And that's the other half of that sermon you always hear. And if I perish, I perish.
Yeah.
And the incredible fortitude and faith. Well, faith. She's going to go no matter what happens.
Right.
A little bit like the Hebrew boys. Well, throw us in the fire. God can protect us. And if he doesn't, we're still not obeying you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Jewish term or the Yiddish term for that is chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
She had chutzpah. But it shows you the whole piece. Now, why he felt that if you don't do this, then God's going to find another way, but you're going to perish. But you will perish. I don't know why he says that piece.
Mm.
But he does. He says it. And, if you don't do what I say, you're going to perish no matter what else happens, even if we get spared. And she's a Jew, and she knows. She knows that her life is on the line every bit as much. Because remember, she hasn't told the king that she's Jewish.
Well, yeah.
When he chose her, she didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, she hasn't seen him for 30 days. That also makes people think that she wasn't actually a queen, but that she was part of the harem. But how it all worked out in Persia, we just don't know.
Right, right. Yeah. And given
since the Bible says she was queen, we believe she was queen.
Yeah, and other than the fact that he was a drunk.
yeah. And wouldn't really remember from one day to the next, exactly what happened.
Yeah. And given that it seemed like he liked his drink more than anything else, it wouldn't matter much, right? So,
yeah. And, when you read about the English kings, pretty much the same story.
Yeah.
As these are people with incredible power, kind of bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bored, yeah. Didn't have cars. They couldn't buy lots of cars.
That's right.
And how many chariots can you have?
That's right. Shall we take a horse ride, King? Seriously? It's so bumpy. I don't know. I'm not sure.
They can only come up with something with suspension.
Yeah, like something.
I don't know. I know there's no such word yet, but
that's right.
I'm going to coin it. So anyway, so this is the big chapter that everybody preaches about.
Mm.
This is the one where Esther has to make her choice. And she finally does, and she has everybody fast and pray, which is really an intriguing part of this. They fast and pray for 3 days.
Yeah, you're right.
She said, and then at the end of that, I'll go and talk to the king. And she's made the incredible, faithful, courageous choice that we all love so much.
Yeah.
Which is maybe another reason that this thing stayed in the scriptures.
Because it's kind of interesting because we read a young voice into this too, right?
Yeah.
Because of how she approaches this, we assume she's young. But if we go back to what you told us last week, that she might be 40.
Yeah.
This is not someone that possibly is. I mean, possibly isn't young. It was just maybe a scared. Is why.
But it does explain why the king hasn't seen her for 40 days.
Oh, you went there. Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah.
My apologies. I read a thing about now, but it might have been Babylon, where generally they brought six of the girls from the harem, and they would go and stay with the king for 3 days.
Okay.
And then they would leave, and another six would come, and this would happen all through the year, and you know, so you may not see the king, you know, like some of the women in these harems probably didn't see the king ever at all.
Right.
Maybe once, even then, if that.
Yeah. Right?
And so that's a whole part of this thing, but this is the faith move of Esther.
Right.
And this is the one where we say, when you're up against it, are you going to be like Esther? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. She did get everybody to fast and pray too.
Yeah, yeah. And in that way, kind of gives Mordecai a direction of like, no, this is how we're going to approach it.
Yeah, yeah. So she didn't just have to obey him. You know, it was up to her what she wanted to do at that point. Once she was queen.
Yeah.
But he was still a very important man. So mm-hmm. it's the whole thing is intriguing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last verse there, folks, is, so Mordecai went away and carried out of all of Esther's instructions.
Yeah. Yeah. And now the story is going to build and twist.
Yeah.
And if you like a good revenge plot, it's thoroughly satisfying.
Wait till next week. We got a story for you.
Oh, wait, that sounds like you're going to say VeggieTales.
It is. It's right. I could hear VeggieTales in the whole thing.
Yeah. Is it Bob the Tomato who says, we've got a story
for you? Yes, and we've got a story for you. Yes. Yeah. And I was actually just listening to a podcast with Phil Vischer in it even, too. So.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
But, folks, what a great, you know, again, we see this point in faith that Esther has to figure out how she's going to respond to God's call. And Mordecai's call. And I love, like Larry said, I love how Mordecai approaches this stuff. Like, look, if you don't do this, you're going to die, but God will find another way. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
You selfish little girl.
Yeah, that's right. What's wrong with you?
He is a Jewish uncle. He's sort of like a father uncle figure.
Right.
So he is a Jewish father. And,
yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
As we know from stereotyping, that's the way they call it.
That's right.
Good racist stereotyping.
Yeah, that's right. Well, folks, thank you so much for being with us. My friend, that was fantastic. Appreciate your insights on that. As we've just said to you, next week we're actually going to see the outplaying of this story. Esther goes, and we're going to see how this kind of plays out for the nation of Israel and for the protagonist and the antagonist in this story. Thanks so much for being here with us. Until next week, I was Steve, he was Larry, and this was the Apocalyptic Podcast.